The VR Podcast. Your realm for all things immersion tech in education and business. Prepare to be transported.
Well, hello, VR Podcast family. It's been a minute since we've come at you, though we've had every expectation of coming at you live from Qspring in March, ISTE Anaheim. But of course, as you all know, every event has been canceled or rescheduled. So here we are coming at you with a very, very special episode with somebody who I've admired for quite some time now. He doesn't really know this, and I don't want to make this episode
No. You're going to make it weird. Bro, I'm telling you right now, you're going to make it weird.
Stop.
You're going to make it weird because, you didn't really reveal this the first time that we met, Stephen, but it's, yes. You're lucky that we got along so well before you shared with me your unhealthy obsession with Disney. And so I'm just going to kind of warn our guest that he doesn't want to reveal too much about things like where he lives, where he vacations, these type things, because I'm trying to protect both of y'all right now.
Okay? Well, I appreciate that. on that note, then, it is my honor to introduce Dan Cockrell, former president of the Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World, where he led upwards of 12,000 cast members who served some 20 million annual guests, right? Including some named Stephen Sato, who sometimes traveled from Los Angeles, California, maybe three times annually, going from all the way again from LA.
I'm going to say this. And then we can get to it, but I have to say this, the fact that you live so close to Disneyland, but you choose to fly to Orlando, I'm not sure if I'm impressed or I'm really concerned about you. Do you have a season pass in Orlando?
Everything, baby. DVC, Vacation Club. I'll stop. All right.
I'm done. Okay, now let's get to Dan.
Almost there. If you would stop interrupting me.
Okay. That might be the last.
All right. Well, Dan also has a new book, and I'm sorry to spoil this, and just give me the no. Okay, I didn't even look and ask, but how's the culture in your kingdom? It's coming out. It's available for pre-order. We'll get into it. That's one of the main reasons why we're here as well. I love that title. And he's going to describe how he's really been able to partner, right, with those 12,000 cast members and even more executives throughout the Walt Disney World Company in a leadership role. And what can we glean from that, right? Some of our listeners here and those that are working with our peers, right, in any sort of leadership role, family included.
Yeah.
So Dan's here to talk today about those learnings, but also about the role that technology may have applied in his role and where he sees technology going in the future, affecting businesses here and in the future.
Yeah, and maybe we can twist his arm a little bit to talk about some, maybe his thoughts on some immersion tech, especially in the shadow of COVID, and maybe how things like virtual reality and augmented reality kind of play a part in that emerging tech. So, without further ado.
Mr. Dan Cockrell, we've kept it way too long. Thank you.
That was the prelude.
Stephen James, I've been thoroughly entertained as you got the show underway here. And Stephen, I agree with you. Disneyland, it's a cute park, but it's no Walt Disney World. So, I'll just put that out there.
I'm going to have to agree.
Man, you're getting some serious backing here, Stephen. And actually, now that he said that, I kind of feel bad for calling you out.
Well, it is the first one. See, you got to do that to him.
And you leapfrog, right? You're first one out. You leapfrog. You got to maintain tradition. You can never really innovate as much as you'd like to. So we acknowledge that, especially as educators. We know that that is always the case. So, look, we'd love to hear from you. Tell our listeners, please, because while we are the virtual reality podcast and there are people who definitely know who you are, a good majority of us want to know from you what you're all about. We'd love to hear.
Yeah. So I worked for the Walt Disney Company for 26 years. So basically my whole adult life, I went to Boston University and studied political science. I had no idea what I wanted to do. And liberal arts seemed like a good thing to study. And Boston seemed like a great town to go to school. So I did that. I worked, I waited tables. I worked on the Walt Disney World College program one summer and I worked the Contemporary Hotel at the front desk. And then I went back to school, and 2 years later, after I graduated, I still did not know what I was going to do. And it happened to be that, you know, Disney was still there. I had a really good experience working there in college. And so I went back down to casting and said, hey, I'd like to work for Disney again. And they said, all right, well, what have you done since you worked here last time? I said, well, I got my political science degree. And they said, all right, what would you like to do? I said, well, I don't know. What would you like to have me do? They said, you should park cars at Epcot. And I said, that's what I was hoping you'd ask me. So I was out in the parking lot at Epcot. It was my first full-time job, and did that for about 6 months. And then at that point, I had an opportunity to go over to France as a management trainee. And I, as I tell people, I did international parking. I opened the parking lot in France because I was an expert in that now.
That's awesome. That's a great title.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, it was probably one of the hardest 6-12 months of my life, you know, moving to another country, didn't speak the language. You're trying to open this brand new theme park. I'm getting management leadership experience. I'm dealing with another culture. Just everything was just overwhelming, but, it changed my life. And, you know, I ended up spending 5 years in France, and my wife is from France. She was, as I like to tell people, she was my meal ticket. I got married to her and got my green card. And was able to support. Now, we've now been married for 27 years. So every anniversary she says, did you really love me, or were you just trying to get your green card? I said, come on, it's been 27. It doesn't really matter at this point. So, but anyway, we stayed there for 5 years. Our son was born over there, and we moved back to Florida in 1997. And then I spent the next 22 years at Walt Disney World. And in the 26 years, I had 19 different jobs. And Disney's big on mobility. If you want to get different experiences, you can absolutely do it with Disney. And I was always looking to learn. That was sort of the theme, not only of like my career, but my life. I've learned that just getting diverse experiences is so valuable, being open-minded, trying new things. And it served me really well. And so back in May of 2018, after a year of discussion my wife and I had, I decided to leave the company and start our own consulting company. And that was probably the most terrifying moment of my life, was leaving Disney, because when you work there so long, it's what you do, that you know everything, you know how to do things, and you just don't even know if you can even do anything in the outside world. And luckily, you know, I had a great role model. My dad was with Marriott for 16 years, and then he was with Disney for 16 years. And he had retired in 2006 at 63 years old, and he had a whole renaissance. He wrote 4 books after he retired, keynote speaker, podcasts. Career Magic was one of his books he wrote. And so when I went and talked to him about it, I said, what do you think about this? He said, Dan, you will be great. You're going to have a blast. He said, it's a whole world out there and people love to hear about Disney. So we took the plunge, and it's been 2 years now. We've been running our own company, and it has been, I've worked more in the past 2 years than I have in the previous 10.
And, wow.
I went from an executive of a Fortune 500 company to a scrappy entrepreneur now, and we're having a blast. It's a whole different world. You don't get paid on Thursday. At the end of the year, if you've had a good year, there's no bonus, no matter how good the year was. So it's a different world now. But all three of our kids are out. One just graduated from college. One's working in Boston, and one's a freshman. So we have a lot more freedom now. So I call it a calculated risk. And wrote the book. We're working closely together on leadership workshops. We do webinars. We do consulting. We've been able to go to Croatia. We were in Peru a couple months ago consulting with a train company down there. So just the world is a really interesting place, and we're really getting to travel a lot now and meet just so many more people.
Wow. That is phenomenal. That's really amazing. I love that. Cause I think it resonates with so many people. You graduate from college, you're like, all right, what am I supposed to do now? And your willingness to do whatever, and how that, where you started from with Disney and where you ended up. Because, you know, while you left the company, it seems like all those things that you learned, all those things that you kind of consumed and acquired as skill sets and stuff, seems to have translated kind of over to your own entrepreneurship, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Experience is such a powerful thing. And you just don't realize how important experience is until you have it. And all of a sudden you're like, wow, I know how to do that. I know how to manage that situation. I know how to deal with that. And you just keep building those experiences up. And I think it just gives, it gave me a lot more choice. You know, once I went into resort hotels for 6 years, I was a newbie. I'm like, I got to figure out how to run a hotel. And a year or two later, I'm like, you know what? I now have that in my portfolio. If ever I need to go do something, I can tell people I know how to run a hotel. Right. And the cool thing about it is, you know, this is how innovation works. Innovation, usually the ideas come from outside your industry. It's usually not within your industry. You get ideas outside your industry. So I found myself dealing with queue line issues in theme parks from my resort experience. And I found myself learning how to track how we clean hotel rooms based on working in food and beverage in the parks. And so a lot of these things just converge over time. And if you can spend enough time in these areas, they all start to intertwine and intermix and you come up with some great solutions.
Okay, Stephen, I'm gonna let you talk, Stephen.
Yeah.
But said, Dan just said something that resonates with me on such a fundamental level. And it's one of those things in education that it's hard to explain to people why I go to conferences that aren't related to education at all. Like in the realm of ed tech, why do I go to conferences that aren't that? Well, you know, going to things like CES or AWE, they're really geared around technologies that's being used in industry. You kind of see, like, it's almost like a prophecy unfolding before you. Like when you see these things, you're like, okay, I know what the skills that are going to be needed. I know what the tools that are coming down that's going to affect education. It may take 5 years, it may take 10 years, but getting outside of your environment, because I don't know if this is true for you, Dan. I find that if you lock yourself in too long to just what you're doing, it almost becomes like a silo or an echo chamber. And it's really hard to be innovative, right? Because you're just kind of either regurgitating some other stuff that people have tried, or you're just kind of static and just kind of dying off a little bit. I love that. That's a great, great point. Okay, Stephen, I'll let you talk.
Well, no, I think that's a really great point. How you mentioned that you and I and others that attend these conferences that are beyond and outside of our particular industry. And it's this prophecy that will come down and trickle down to education, right? That's our world at this moment. And so I think, Dan, to your previous point about, maybe questioning, well, can I do anything outside of this Disney Corporation? The fact that you have, as a leader, spent time in the various roles within your own company that are, as you just described, food and beverage, you know, ticket at the kiosk at the gate, at the hotels, wherever you have spent your time to understand just a little bit of how those job functions operate, so that you can take that sort of superintendent role, as you described, you know, as well, over and with your cast members as peers and humans. So because you have this experience, you now have that ability to go out into the world and affect change, however you do that, whether it's what you're doing right now. And if you just were going to go work for another theme park company or a hotel, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny when my wife and I, Valerie, you know, she is conservative in making decisions, and, you know, she's very thoughtful about things. And I'm kind of the, let's jump in and it'll all work out at the end of the day. And so we're opposite that way. But when we started talking about leaving Disney, I was freaked out. I'm like, I didn't want to do it. She goes, it'll be fine. And I said, why are you so calm about this? She goes, well, because if it doesn't work out, you can always go get a job. I'm like, you're pretty cavalier about this, but if you are comfortable with this, I'm comfortable. So let's go. And that was the fun part. And the cool thing about it is, you know, we've been married for 27 years, but I didn't realize how big a change it was going to be to learn how to work together. I mean, we knew how to be married, but we'd never worked together that closely. And we actually got to a whole nother level. It took a while, but we now kind of were in our groove that we respect each other professionally now also, because she's very organized. She's thoughtful about how putting things together. You know, she was a facilitator with Disney Institute for many years. And then I'm the guy that comes in with no script and just starts talking. And so we've learned how to kind of meet each other halfway. And she's like, all right, you have a thing tomorrow and we are rehearsing. I don't want to rehearse. So, and when I do it, I get better. So we've learned how to kind of hit it now. So it's been fun.
These are great life lessons, because me and my wife are both in education, and my wife has always said we can't work together. So I'm just going to force her to listen to this episode and say, look, it's possible. We may try to kill each other, but we can work through it.
Well, here's the funny thing. Like before this, right, pre-show, guys, we were talking about how James and I, we use the L word. I'll stop right there. But anyways, James and I were talking about how, like, you know, we work together, and to the extent that we now have a friendship and are really, you know, great friends. But anyways, that aside, it's funny because James, you're very much like Dan, that I, where it's sort of just off the cuff. I'm just going to say no script. And then here I am sort of like, yes, it will be great because we're going to pre-plan. We're going to do everything. And that's why, because I looked at it and there's the read copy that we're looking at right here. And some of that I was reading for this episode today, but you're like, forget that. Let's just do it.
Yeah, you know it's really, really like Steven's so good. He's got these thoughtful points and stuff on this copy, and then like for me, what he puts, this is literally what he puts after like 7 or 8 section. He puts my part says for James. Yeah, Steven, ellipse.
Yeah. Just agree.
He's got it like 7 or 8 times on here. He's just like, he knows me too well. It's really good.
Oh man. Well, so definitely, Dan, we love like hearing where you've come from, and sort of I think what our listeners are going to want to hear is A, what they would have to pay for. So let's give it all of them right here, so they don't have to pay for your knowledge, right, around leadership and what is their kingdom, what does their culture look like inside their kingdom. But help us understand, glean a little bit off of what you've learned from Disney and what you would say to leaders who are working with either peers or subordinates or what it is that you teach others. Give us little tidbits.
Sure. Well, you know, when I put the book together, yeah, you know, I'd been gone from Disney for a couple months, and I kind of had, I call it one of those Jerry Maguire moments where I stayed up one night and I just started writing down, okay, what do I know? What do I know? Do I know how to communicate? Yes, I do. Well, how do I know how to communicate? Because this. Do you know how to make decisions? Yeah, I do. Well, how do you make decisions? And I just made this big list and these little descriptions of each one of those. And I sent it to a friend of mine who's a professor at Rollins at the Cromer Graduate School down here in Winter Park, Florida. And I said, Keenan, I don't know what I have here, but I got a whole bunch of stuff. Can you look at it? And literally 24 hours later, he sent it right back to me. He said, you have 3 main themes. I put them in each of the columns. You have a whole section about leading yourself, a whole section about leading your team, and a whole section about leading your organization. And here's how it's broken down. I mean, it was like magic. And I said, man, I didn't even see that. So that's how the book's organized. That's how my webinars are organized. Everything I've done is around that. And we actually added a 4th section about leading change. That seemed like a real important area to be adding. And we pulled some of the chapters out. So the book starts with leading self. You got to lead yourself before you can do anything else well. And that's very simple things. And as my wife says, Valerie says, don't mistake simple with easy. Simple doesn't mean easy. It just means easy to comprehend, but often the things that are really simple are really hard to execute upon. And so just, you know, staying fit, managing stress, getting enough sleep, organizing your time, all the things you can do to take stress out of your life and be in a better mindset. Because when you're in a better mindset, you have a better relationship with your family. You have a better relationship with your coworkers. You can handle change better. And so we kept that at the beginning of the book, just that basic piece of it's in your hands, this balance piece. The second part of the book is about leading your team. You know, that's when a lot of really talented leaders get promoted, and they go from being individual contributors to leading groups of managers. And that's a big step, getting things done through people. And it takes a different mindset. And so in the book, I kind of write about that, of how do you select the right people for jobs? How do you build relationships with them, set clear expectations for performance, and then make sure you're rewarding and recognizing them when appropriate. And then the third part of the book is more traditional business kind of stuff around creativity and innovation. It's around collaboration, communication, decision-making. And then the fourth part of the book is around leading change. You know, at Disney, we learned a lot. There's changes happening all the time. And sometimes either the change happens to us or we cause the change. But what's for sure is you can accelerate that change if you can get people on board and they understand early why you're changing, what's coming at you. Something we talk about is, you know, authorship inspires ownership. So the more you can get people involved in decisions you're making as soon as possible, once the change happens, people are much more encouraged to try to, fix it and find solutions because they were part of creating it. If they don't have any skin in the game, then sometimes it's like, well, why would I support this? You didn't even get me to participate at the beginning. So now I'm just going to let it kind of sink until you get me involved. So a lot of this is psychology.
Yeah. You know what I liked about what you said was that the concept of change and how that is, that's pretty much the constant. And I would imagine at a company like Disney, it's one of those things where change is happening and you're either a part of it, leading it, or you're just going to become aggravated and bitter about those things. And you know, one of the things that I'm wondering is because like when you talk about innovation, and it's really hard for some to kind of delineate innovation from technology. They think, oh, technology or digital technology specifically is what drives innovation. And that's not really true. Innovation is really more about the mindset and the ability to process things in a certain way or with others and things like that. So, but I do want us to think about like on those moments where, you know, we had talked earlier about you're applying skill sets from other areas into new areas and this idea of innovation. How maybe technology played a part of that, or probably more importantly, thinking about maybe how technology was like a barrier, how y'all kind of overcame those things in a leadership role and also maybe in some execution.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think a misnomer is a lot of times people say, and I use that term, creativity and innovation, and you know they're not the same. And I've looked them up the dictionary and tried to figure out what the difference is. And what I've concluded is, creativity is coming up with new ideas. Innovation is implementing them to solve problems. And sometimes companies, you know, it's the new shiny toy, and they're like, let's put this in place because it's really cool. And it's like, well, you're not solving any problems. You're just doing it because it's cool to do. So this term, just because you can doesn't mean you should, right? It plays out a lot. And so at Disney, we saw that many times. So a good example of that was FastPass. You know, for many years, you could say we had FastPass for many, many years. It was called like a dining reservation. I reserve a spot, I reserve a table in a restaurant, and you hold that table. And when I get there, I get to sit down. And then someone started to say, well, what if an attraction was just like a restaurant? What if it was every pirate boat that comes through is a table? And you're going to seat the table, you're going to have a dwell time at that table, and you're going to get people out of that table and put them in the new one. It's just now, instead of dealing with 20 tables, you're dealing with thousands of people every hour. And the technology, we said, you know what, we can figure this out now. We can print tickets. We can have people make reservations, and they're going to have a one-hour window to show up for their table, and we're going to be able to put them in there. So technology really helped us drive that forward. And then that whole time they're waiting in line, now we can get them out of line. We can have them wait somewhere else, which means we can have them wait and have them shop or another attraction or do something else. So in that case, we were solving a problem and we were creating value at the same time. Then we'd have other situations where, you know, the Imagineering team in Glendale, they would come to us and they'd say, we have this really cool new technology, but we don't have an application. So how do you think we could use this? And we would look at an operations and we would start kicking it around and try to figure out, well, I don't know, you know, what could this be? So one of the things they came up with, I remember way back in the day, they had built this big basin out of plywood and they put tar on the bottom of it. And they were figuring out how they could guide boats around this basin with magnets on the floor of the, and they can move magnets underwater and move the boat around. So nothing's touching it, but it can guide the boat. And they said, all right, where can we've come up with this technology, where can we use it? And if you go to Shanghai Disney today at the Pirates attraction, they're using that technology. So once you're not in the flume the whole time, you go out into a little bay area and the boat takes you in the exact path every time because this magnet system was put in place. So sometimes we come up with a technology and find an application, or we know what the problem is and we start looking at all the technologies out there that we could apply to it. One of the things we like to think about in the hospitality industry is personalized service. And it's really nice when people know who you are. They know your name. They know your preferences. The problem is when you're entertaining 20 million guests a year, it's an environment, it's very hard to personalize the service because you're dealing with volumes and you're really focused on moving people, large groups of people quickly. But then, you know, My Magic Plus came and RFID technology came forward. And we said, you know what, we can start to tell who people are just by now, because we have this RFID band. Not only does it have near field communication, But more importantly, which is a big difference, it has a battery, so it can actually emit a signal. So now we can find people, we can find out who they are, what their name is. Now, once you have that information, how do you operationalize that? And that's where you have to come back to the cast members and train them and teach them how to bring that experience to life. Because, you know, I could walk up to you and say, hi, Steven.
Yeah.
And hi, I see you're visiting from Los Angeles. And then you get into the creepy personalization. It's like, now you're just showing off and it's weird that you know my name and I don't think I like that. Versus me walking up and saying, hey, how are you today? How's your visit been? Do you prefer here or California or Disneyland? Or, you know, you start to have, so a lot of times the personalization isn't in your face. It's just, if we know what your preferences are, we know you've been here once or 100 times, we can start to ask you questions that just make sense to you. We can start offering you things that you're going to look at and go, wow, that's exactly what I wanted. How did they know? Right? That's what Amazon used to do. And now It's like, you know, you look up one toaster on Amazon and all of a sudden everything around you pops up toasters and you're like, all right, this is overload.
Now it's, if you think about it, I'm telling you, it's right true. Now, geofencing and things like that are really crazy. I was literally, I probably have told this story on this podcast, but I was in Walmart and I was looking at the arcade 1-Up machines because I'm that kind of person. I love old school arcade machines. Didn't say anything out loud. Nothing that my phone could hear. I was just looking at it. Didn't even touch it. That evening when I went home, every ad that was coming out was from Arcade. Yep. Arcade 1-Up. It's like, oh, okay.
Someone knows.
And that's the beauty. So to your point, James, and also to Dan's, like the point of Magic Bands and the data that you can grab, it's so personal, as you guys just have described, right? And I think that's great. And then, so that's the shiny new toy. But then what's that next shiny new toy? It's virtual reality, right? How can you personalize an experience for somebody knowing exactly what they want to do? And, oh, by the way, because it's done in completely a CG manner, it can be that much more personalized, right? So we're talking about immersive things like the Star Wars Hotel. We're talking about other things that are immersive, The Void, okay, that partnership there with Lucas and others to do a VR collaborative experience. But can you talk to us, Dan, about maybe some of the things that Disney was thinking about, is doing, and also how James and I can work for Disney in the immersive VR space? That would be huge.
That's the most important thing.
This is a job interview. I didn't know.
This is. Did we pass yet? Are we on to the next stage?
That's good. Yeah. It's, you know, interestingly, I've heard Bob Iger interviewed a couple times, and he said, I don't know if he literally said this, but I've heard him say, we won't have virtual reality in our parks. He was just, that wasn't his thing. And he just, I'm not sure what his point of view was, but there's a place for it. I think technology, you know, it's the novelty of it comes and goes so fast, right?
Yeah.
You put on the VR goggles and you're like, wow, this is cool. And then after 5 minutes, you're like, all right, well, that was cool, but I'm moving on now. So there has to be an emotional connection. There has to be a story. There has to be something that's going to hook you emotionally. It can't just be the technology that's going to hook you, because, you know, we used to think, I mean, gosh, this was only 13 years ago, the iPhone came out. And today I don't think people even think anymore about how miraculous this device is and everything it can do. We just take it as it's just something we have now. And it doesn't become like the cool new thing. It's just like, well, yeah, I have an iPhone and it has Siri and it's a computer and it can track where I am and remind me what to do. And we just take it for granted. So, you know, that's why Apple keeps talking about, you know, you just want to be different. It's a lifestyle you want to be. Do you want to be connected and that kind of thing? So you can't just use a technology on its own. It has to be able to get back to a very human, emotional, and deliver the story. So that's when, you know, My Magic Plus came out. We had to almost go overboard to tell the cast, look, the technology is not what's magical here. It's how you're going to use it to give better service and to create more memorable experiences for people and get them emotionally connected so they'll come back here again. And I think that's where we see it going. So as long as you can, you know, it's going to be about content, right? If I can get a VR space and say, hey, Dan, we're going to take you back to the 80s and we're going to take you into an arcade back in the 80s and you can go play. Yeah. I used to go to arcades where, you know, they were a quarter, but there was a place like you could go from like 9 to 11. It was like $5 all you can play. And it was like the coolest thing ever. Like if you gave me a VR experience around that, I'd be all over it. I'm like, I can play Galaga and I can play, you know, I can do all that kind of stuff, because for me, that's a, there's emotion to that. I can go back in time and experience those places. So I think it's not going to be the technology that makes a difference. It's going to be what can you deliver through it. It's going to really be the hook.
So really, really quickly, I know James wants to get in there. I can see him. I see him.
No, look, I'm restraining.
Dan, you brought up something really, really important to my childhood. At Disneyland Anaheim, this was the only thing that really was keeping me at Disneyland in the 1990s. There was a game called R360. This was a one-level flight simulation arcade game that was played in the Starcade, and it was $4 because the machine moved in all 360, in 360, right? And so you could do a barrel roll. And it was so immersive, and it was $4 when I was very, very young, and I spent all my money there. I got churros. I couldn't buy anything other than play this video game, right? And I had to get a ticket into Disneyland just to do it. Anyway, highly, highly immersive, and I think that's what can be done with VR. But anyway, I'll stop right there because I'm just like, it's not available, so why talk about it anymore? I'm so bummed. Starcade. Yeah, what happened?
How could it be so cool in the 90s and it's gone? Like, what happened?
I don't know, because they'd be charging $40 now for one. <What's that? laughs> $4. Anyway, I'll stop it right there.
Well, I think that I think when we think about those applications of VR, certainly in the coming years, we're going to see an expansion beyond just understanding of virtual reality in a head mounted display.
Yeah.
Like those experiences, like the thing that Disney does so well is the storytelling and immersiveness that is around you at all times. It is a virtual reality experience in of itself, right? But how does the technology that we have of digital projection, manipulation, stereoscopic, how does that come into play? And I think that's probably something that Disney does in spots already. And I think that they're just going to expand on it. But I think you're right. You know, thinking in terms of what we think about VR today with applications to a theme park is kind of difficult. I mean, you see the one in Dubai. I think Dubai has the one. Is the biggest VR theme park?
Yeah. Is it Art Park or VR? Yeah.
Yeah, VR Park, I think is what it's called. Yeah. And I mean, it looks great. But a lot of those things aren't necessarily head mounted display. A lot of those things are. You get into like that capsule, you get into that shell or something like that. It's probably actually, it's probably a better experience all the way around for people versus the head mounted display. Head mounted display is much more personal or I guess more residential.
I agree. There was, you all remember Disney Quest at Walt
Disney. Oh, yeah.
And when you look at like the pirate game where you got in the ship and. Yeah. There was projection all around you and you had the cannons and someone was driving. I mean, for me, that was almost like a better experience than the VR piece. Although, you know, it wasn't the fidelity wasn't as good. You were standing up, you were moving around. It seemed much more real and much more exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't want to take up too much more of your time, Dan. Because we're going to go down this rabbit hole, and we're going to keep you on here for hours because I have unlimited amount of time on this program. So, but what I would like to talk about is A, how can people get in contact with you? B, is it possible to pre-order your book now or when is it coming out? Yeah. And C, like scheduling with you about some, like speaking opportunities and stuff like that. How can they do all those things?
Yeah. So, I built a website when I first left Disney called dancockrell.com, and it was great. And then about 4 months ago, we met another guy from Tampa, and we decided to build version 2. So my wife led that project. So we have a new website we just launched last week called cockrellconsulting.com. Okay. And it features both of us. And it's got videos. It shows all the different things we do, consulting, webinars, speaking, executive coaching, you name it, it's in there. And you can find everything about it. The book, it comes out August 11th in bookstores, but I am selling author copies right now. You can go to dancockrell.com or cockrellconsulting.com, or you go directly to culture-kingdom.com is where I'm selling the book. And I'm learning about sales and marketing now. So someone told me, if you're going to do that, put some digital bonuses in there. So I put some digital bonuses that you can get, you'll download and immediately get when you buy it. There's some fun stuff in there. And our emails are on the website. My cell phone number's on the website. You know, as I learned at Disney World, you got to be accessible to people and, yeah. and let people get in contact with you. And it's all there. And we, you know, the cool thing we like to sell ourselves is we're not facilitators. We have led businesses and we're learning to teach now. And so when we go into conferences, people are like, well, what's your script? I'm like, there's no script. We're just, you ask questions and we're just going to talk because we're old and we have lots of experience. And it's been fun. And it's really, we're working with accounting companies, healthcare companies, concrete companies, hotel companies. You know, this idea of creating culture, creating an environment for your employees to thrive in is a universal concept. And, if you have employees, you have customers and you're trying to make money, these concepts apply.
Kind of want to extend a little invitation to you, Dan, if you're up for it. Me and Steven, we do podcasts, which I am going to give a little bit of a plug. Dan has a podcast. It's Rain or Shine. Check it out. Yep. It's a really good listen. But we also have something called a Spatial Cast. It's like a TV show done in virtual reality, but we get to share these elements of storytelling with an audience. And so we want to extend that to you. It's called The Simulation Live. And if you're willing to come on and maybe take part in that, we would love to have you.
Yeah, as long as you can give me instructions on how to load up my son's Oculus Quest, I'm all in.
Man, that's
we got
easy.
You.
We do that on a daily basis. Yeah. Awesome. Well, that is great. Make sure that y'all check out the show notes. We're going to make sure we put in those links that Dan mentioned. And we're also going to go ahead and we'll put in the link to his podcast. We want to make sure you listen to that as well. So, Dan, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Thank you. Thank
it was you. So much fun. Steve, as always, thank you, my friend. And for our listeners, make sure you check out our other episodes and check us out at the VR Podcast. And don't forget to get involved, right? We want to hear from you. So check us out on social media and everywhere else on all these little podcast episodes. But that's it. That's it. That's
thank y'all.
Bye, y'all.
Peace.
Want to hear more or connect with us? Subscribe to the podcast and find us on social media at The VR Podcast.